Welcome to the Small Batch Edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I am the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Stephen, this sucks.
This is not a good year.
This is not. I'm tired of doing this with you. Stephen and I are in the studio today, having just received the news of the death of Prince, who was 57. What is this year, man?
I mean, looking over a list of musicians who've died this year alone, we didn't even talk about Merle Haggard on the show.
No, we didn't.
Vanity was one that hit me really hard. She was a collaborator of Prince's who died earlier this year.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Also at 57. And that's the first thing I want to get into with Prince is just how frequently and extensively he worked with and celebrated and provided songs for this incredible array of women musicians. He had women in his band throughout his career. You know, looking over a list of his collaborators, not only women he performed with or produced, but women he wrote songs for. He wrote I Feel For You by Chaka Khan. He wrote Nothing Compares To You, which Sinead O'Connor covered.
He wrote When You Were Mine, which Cyndi Lauper covered, I know.
He wrote For Sheena Easton and Sheila E. and Apollonia and this incredible array of women whose music he celebrated. And then you get into his own career, his own body of just this unbelievable collection of songs.
Yeah.
This towering canon of funk and R&B and pop songs. Part of what always struck me about Prince, I always bought Prince's albums when I was a kid. Because they were not only popular, they were not only on the radio, but they were just so cool.
They were just so good. They were so cool. And the other thing is, you know, I am much less closely connected to music than you are in an ongoing way. But for me, when I talk sometimes about the fact that, like, look, my generation, when people talk about the music of, like, the 80s when I was a teenager, you take a lot of beatings for some of the stuff that was popular then,
and
people make fun of you or whatever. You know, the people who were my approximate generation, darn it, they were able to recognize that Purple Rain was, like, a great, great record. And that record was incredibly popular. In addition to being recognized as great, it was incredibly popular. It was playing everywhere. So when I think about the fictitious line between popularity and quality, that is literally the record that I'm usually going to. The other thing is, like you said, it's just the volume. Because as we were coming in here, I was talking about the song Seven.
Yeah.
And you just have to hear the beginning. It is like an electric shock.
All seven and we'll watch them fall. They stand in the way of love and we will smoke them all. And a savoir-faire, no one in the whole universe will ever compare. I am yours now and you are mine, and together we'll love through all space and time, so don't cry. One day all seven will die.
One thing that really jumped out as I was thinking, like, what is Prince's legacy besides this incredible body of songs? And one of them is he is such a fascinating case of an artist who was unbound by constraints on his creativity.
Mm-hmm.
A movie like Purple Rain, which in many ways was a vanity project, but still was somebody who was like, this guy is a pop star. No, he's also going to be a movie star. He's also going to be, he's just going to try things. And if you look at the body of Prince's albums, which really, I mean, to say they varied widely in quality from about 1993 to the present day is a tremendous understatement. Once he was freed from his label deal, and like one of his first orders of business was to put out this record called Crystal Ball, which was four CDs long, and just trying to wade through and pick through and find the gems in this incredibly prolific catalog, he was just always looking for ways to control what he was doing creatively and reject any attempts to constrain that.
Well, it's interesting that we were talking so relatively recently about David Bowie, because to me, there's a kinship between some of what people appreciated about David Bowie and what they appreciated about Prince, some of which is visible on the surface, that they were both very kind of playful about gender and stuff like that. And
both had a somewhat of an otherworldly quality.
Right, an otherworldly quality. But I think ultimately those are both people who part of what folks related to about them was this idea that you can try whatever you want. When people in music talk about nonconformity being cool, they're very often talking about a very specific kind of nonconformity.
Yeah.
They're talking about a loud, rebellious rock and roll, often hyper-masculine nonconformity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Prince and David Bowie are both people who said, no. When I say nonconformity, I mean nonconformity with that too.
Right.
I mean nonconformity with everything that's ever been, which is what nonconformity really is. Not a pop culture image of nonconformity, but like, no, really, you look at the person and you say, that's kind of strange. And all this stuff, like when I, you know, I changed my name and now I'm a symbol. And the stuff that kind of became a punchline.
Yeah.
It became a punchline, but it's all part of that idea that he did whatever he wanted. And that is a really valuable thing to have in the culture.
It was interesting. I was driving into work with my girlfriend yesterday, and we were listening to the radio. We were just flipping channels, and the song Kiss came on.
Mm-hmm.
We just stared slack-jawed at the dashboard at just how different it sounded everything else.
How playful it is. And it's just so silly in a way, and also so sexy. You can't be too flirty, mama. I know how to undress me. Yeah. I want to be your fantasy. Maybe you could be mine. You just leave it all up to me. We could have
It's incredibly sexy, and we were just marveling. And I said to Katie, I was like, when that song came out, I was probably about 14, and it was in the relatively recent aftermath of Purple Rain, which yielded, you know, just years worth of singles.
Yeah.
And I remember as like a 14-year-old hearing that song and just being like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
And having it be one of the first opportunities to be really surprised by an artist I loved. He just kept doing that. And you mentioned how fun that song is and how silly that song is. I mean, as recently as 2007, I think one of the reasons this hits so hard, he was 57, he was so young. In 2007, he performed that Super Bowl halftime show.
With
the guitar shooting the sparks. But it was dirty in the most playful, goofy.
It's not angry dirty. It's just like dirty, dirty.
It's just dirty, dirty. It was just fun dirty.
Yeah.
To have him be that vital. I mean, he would have released how many more albums?
Yeah. And I do want to mention, too, there is also a really strong presence of like a pop culture Prince that goes even beyond strict musical genius.
Yeah.
This is also somebody whose music really just seeped in. When you say Kiss, I also think of Julia Roberts in the tub in Pretty Woman with a Walkman on,
mm-hmm.
and she's singing Kiss to herself. And the whole thing is it's just this, you completely believe in that moment that she's just disappeared into listening to music, and it's so fun and funny, and she's just kind of, you know, tootling away to herself in this other world. And so this is music that, you know, like with David Bowie and like with certain other people, the music becomes just part of the soundtrack of kind of everything.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I thought was so lovely and fun is that just a couple of years ago in 2014, after the Super Bowl, they ran an episode of New Girl on Fox, where Prince, the whole idea was the gang went to this party and Prince was supposed to be there. So they were trying to meet Prince. And it's one of those things where a lot of times a sitcom will do something like that. And what you'll get is like a 5-second cameo at the end where the person like walks through and waves. This was not that. Prince kind of leaned into being in this episode of New Girl. And there's all this stuff where like he goes and talks. Like the idea of Zooey Deschanel and Prince in the same scene is so much.
Yeah.
There's a little clip, you can find this little tiny clip on YouTube, of when Nick and Jess first see Prince.
Hi. I'm Prince. So what seems to be the problem? How rude of me. I haven't given you enough time to freak out yet. You may do so now.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
What I hadn't seen him do a lot outside of music was display that kind of playfulness and sense of humor, you know, in other realms. And it was really fun to watch. Like, I liked adding that to my library of images of him.
Yeah.
So let's go out on some music. What do you want to hear?
I want to hear all of Prince's music for the next several days. I'll just go with the song that hit me at a just a very pivotal moment in my life and just go right up the middle and say When Doves Cry, which is a perfect song.
Thanks very much. Full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday at npr.org or on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts or on NPR One. Thanks very much, Stephen.
Thank you.